Pirkei Avos, Perek 4. We're going to be on page 59 if anybody wants to look. We're going to start with the fourth parak because that's when this week is going to be. Just going to do the official 10-second wait. I don't really have to do the official 10-second wait because it's an unofficial class. I'd like to just tell you my thought for the class tonight, give you what I would like to call the rules of engagement for the course of the evening. Meaning, since it's not really a lecture, and I was hoping to learn a little Pirkei Avos, and I was going to learn it tonight anyway, so I figured anybody who's here can learn it with me. I also wanted to make it available for open discussion. The problem is sometimes when you get open discussion, there are differences of opinion. And differences of opinion are okay. There is no one opinion when it comes to Pirkei Avos. As a matter of fact, we start reading Pirkei Avos from Pesach until Shavuos, so that's 7 weeks, and then we keep going through the summer. And we repeat Pirkei Avos over and over and over so many times. And if you think about how many years Klal Yisrael is doing this already, so there's obviously something new that can always be extracted. There's obviously many, many opinions. I know of at least 150, 200 Svarim that are written on Pirkei Avos. Probably more things written on Pirkei Avos than anything probably other than the Haggadah of Pesach. And we all know how many Haggadahs there are. So there will be differences of opinion, and that's okay. The only rules of engagement or that I would like to have is that when we get into a conversation at some point, since I'm on this side and I can see the audience, the crowd, and where people are at, even if your point is not made, even if somebody does not accept what you wanted to share or say, even if somebody has been debating it, when I say, like a mediator, okay, point made, let's hold off, let's go on to the next thing, please respect that out of need for everybody, and everybody's welcome to join, everyone's welcome to join the conversation. You have a thought, just let me know. Okay, this week is going to be the fourth week of Pirkei Avos because this coming Shabbos is the fourth chapter that we're going to read. So I figured we'll start with that. Ben Zoma Omer, Ben Zoma says, it's customary to say, Kol Yisrael Yeshem Cheilke Om Haba, Shenem Avamech Kulim Tzadikim, Welem Yeshu Aretz Netzem Atoy Masa Yoda Veispoyer. All of Israel has a share and a portion of the world to come. As it is said, and your people are all righteous forever. They shall inherit the land. They are the branch of my planting, the works of my hands, in which to take pride. We're not going to go through that today because we've discussed this in great detail in the past, last year and beforehand. So I don't want to get caught up on that today. We'll continue with the first mission in the fourth parak. Ben Zoma Omer. Interestingly, Ben Zoma's first name was Shimon, I think. Was Shimon Ben Zoma. And he never earned the title of rabbi. And that is because he died very, very young. And so even though he belonged to the schools and he learned and he sat and he learned all the time and he's mentioned several times in the Torah. Anybody remember where in the Haggadah Ben Zoma is mentioned? We talk about Ben Zoma, he's even mentioned in the Haggadah. Right. What? No, he wasn't there. But one of the rabbis in Haggadah was talking about how Ad Shadarshu Ben Zoma, he never knew what time he had to read Krishna until Ad Shadarshu Ben Zoma until Ben Zoma learns. You see, even though he wasn't a rabbi, but the other rabbis quoted him, they respected him, he was very, very learned, you know, beyond, but he never got a smicha and he never made it that way. As a matter of fact, there's a very interesting Gemara that talks about dreams. And the Gemara discusses dreams. It talks about if a person sees an elephant in the dream, what does it mean? If a person, chas v'shalom, sees him losing his teeth in his dream. A lot of different things it says. The Gemara says if a person sees Ben Zoma in his dream, then he should request chachma. It means he should ask. Now's a good time for him to ask for wisdom. I'll see why in a second. I don't know what Ben Zoma looked like. If I saw him in my dream, I would have no idea that was him. But it says if you see Ben Zoma in your dream, I guess it was a time when people knew what Ben Zoma looked like. So you should yitzap a chachma. You should request wisdom. Who gave smicha then? The smicha usually came from a rabbi. If you had, you were in a yeshiva, you belonged to a particular school, and the head of that school would be the one who would continue with the smicha. So, you know, if you, it depends on what group you were learning with, where you learned, but you had to have that officially handed down to be. You didn't wake up in the morning and say, you know, I want to be a rabbi today. Yeah, yeah, so smicha has been always, it started with Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe gave smicha to Yahushua, Hashem tells him, give smicha to Yahushua, he actually gave him smicha. In the Hasidic world, in the real Hasidic world, the way it works is they actually go through a process of smicha with the previous rabbi, if he'll do that, will put his hands on the head of the son and say, Yoshi B'Sisrael, and a whole bunch of things, and turn over the dynasty, and supposedly passing on to him the powers that go along with, you know, with goes with smicha. I mean, you mentioned Hasidic world, I mentioned it, so I'm just going to tell you that years ago, when I was in Passaic, New Jersey, so every once in a while, the Skolia Rebbe used to come out for a Shabbos, and he spent time with the Agud or wherever it was very interfaith, so to speak. It was in the Jewish community. But, you know, we crossed the borders of Hasidus and not Hasidus. It doesn't make a difference. So the shul board was planning, or one of the Gabbayim was sitting and planning which Shabbos he should come out. So it came out that he should come out on Parshas Toldos. So one guy got up and said, you know, I don't want the Rebbe to come Parshas Toldos. He goes, why not? And he goes, the Rebbe came last year on Parshas Toldos. I already heard him say Torah on Parshas Toldos. I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I've heard the Rebbe say Torah on Shabbos he speaks three times every Shabbos. I heard him for 15 years, whatever it was. I've yet to hear him go past the first pasuk in the parsha, on any parsha, because there is so much that can be done on any word, on any letter, and so far. So Pirkei Avos was starting a parak, was starting a Mishnah. There is so much that can be said and expanded upon on any word for someone to say, the Perek Dalet. I learned Perek Dalet already. That's you know, it doesn't work that way. It's like really, it's available for everything. So what does Ben Zoma say? There are really four things that everybody in life, at one way or another, goes after. And I'll tell you very quickly what they are before we see it inside. Wisdom. Honor. Power. And respect. So those are things that people go for. Again, wisdom. Next is power. You want to be able to have power. And then wealth and respect. Those are four things in life that people always somehow or another, more things have collapsed and been built, and more kingdoms have fallen over those four aspects. So I think it was a very interesting undertaking of Ben Zoma to come along and say, okay, let's define these four things through a Torah perspective and see what's going on. And we'll see what everybody else has to say about this as well. Ben Zoma says, Ezehu Chacham, which is a wise man? What constitutes wisdom? So if I asked you, what constitutes wisdom? What would be your first reaction? What constitutes wisdom? Solomon had wisdom, right? King Solomon, who was brilliant, right? He knew more than anybody else. As a matter of fact, it says Solomon was wise. Why? Because he was chacham, the same word, chacham, mikol adam. What does that mean? Translated in English, it means he was wiser than any other man, right? But it doesn't mean just that. It means chacham mikol adam. He was wise because he learned from every man. Solomon was the individual who knew that no matter what anybody had to say, he had to listen. We're so busy sometimes trying to give our own opinion about something. We're so busy trying to say what we have to say that we don't take the time. We don't take the time to listen to what someone else has to say. I had my cousin David and Abe, two brothers are attorneys, malpractice, personal injury attorneys. You should never need them, but if you do, there's nobody better to call. This is not a commercial. And David is the kind of person who argued a case in front of the Supreme Court in his 20s. And he was very aggressive. They say he was straight for the jugular, you know? And AB's brother was the quietest, most humble person. There was a short period of time that AB came into business with me and was working with me in a jewelry business. And I used to watch him at business meetings. We had with major companies at the time. And AB would just sit there quiet and not say a word throughout the whole meeting. And I used to look at him after. I said, AB, one of the reasons we brought you on is because you're this brilliant attorney. Why aren't you saying anything? Why are you quiet? He told me then, he says, you learn more by listening than you do by talking. I'll get my opinion through. Don't worry. When the time comes, what I have to say, everybody will know. But what you hear other people say, there's so much you can learn from what somebody else has to say. Says Ben Zoma, Ezehu Chacham, who is a wine man? Haloi made mikol adam. Somebody who learns from everybody and anybody. Look at the bottom, and it says in English, Ezehu Chacham, the number one. Which person is wise? Ben Zoma does not mean to say that people cannot be wise, strong, rich, happy, or honored unless they comply with his definitions. He's not saying it's my way or the highway. Rather, he is telling us that people are entitled to take pride in their achievements. You know, I did it, I'm so smart. When can you take pride in that? Only if they are attained and exercised in accordance with the moral teachings of the Torah. Means if you achieved wisdom based on the Torah definition, then you can pat yourself on the back and say, I achieved wisdom. But other wisdom, says Ben Zoma, this is what you have to do in order to be able to achieve on your own. How do you know that? So he quotes a pasuk in the Torah, Halomid mikol adam shenemar, mikol malamdei hiskalti, I have learned from all of the people around me, everybody was available, everybody taught me something, I learned from everybody. Can you learn something from a Russia? See, an evil person, a wicked person. You think he's including a Russia? You think it means that there's a bad guy? Can you learn something from a bad guy? Thoughts? Right? What can you learn? What not to do. What not to do sometimes is just as important as knowing what to do. I saw it brought down, not just what not to do, but it talks about by Yaakov Avinu. When Yaakov left a Lavan, and Lavan comes running after him, and Yaakov says to him, and his wife stole Lavan's Avodah Zorah, and Lavan came to find the Avodah Zorah. Yaakov says, "Ma pishi machatosi, what's my fault? What did I do wrong? Why are you coming running after me?" So it says that Yaakov Avinu was saying in so many words, "How big is my sin?" What does that mean? He saw the enthusiasm with which Lavan was running after his Avodah Zorah. He saw his drive. He saw the how much he wanted it. And Yaakov said back and said, did I serve God with the same thrust that he served his Avodah Zarah, that he wanted the same power that he goes after the Avodah Zarah? So Yaakov perceived that. And he learned from Lavan, Mapishi Machatasi, wow, you know what? Maybe I got to improve myself. Yeah, of course, I'm not going after Avodah Zarah. But if you can put that much energy into that, he learned that from a Russia. He learned that from a Russian, a bad person. So we can learn from a Russian not just what not to do, but sometimes we can learn from them what to do as well. We see the way they go after their things that they want, and do we apply the same stress and the same love, the same force into achieving and accomplishing something the way a Russian goes after that which he wants on the negative? Anybody have any other thoughts about learning from everybody and learning from anybody? Mikol Adam? Yes. Every attribute that Hashem gave us has a positive application. So, yes, when we learn in Mesilas Yesharim, when we learn in Musa, that being proud or being egotistical is a negative, but every negative application that God gave us has a practical application as well. Again, I'm going to mention this only because I had the personal experience with him with the Skolya Rebbe when I was in San Francisco. One of the times he came down there to do some fundraising. So San Francisco is not the place to, you know, take a Hasidic Rebbe through the streets. You know, that's just not the place for it. And when I brought him to the downtown, so he went to the parking lot, and when we came out of the building, this is exactly what he did. We came out of the building, he took his glasses off, he folded them and he put them into his pocket. And I looked at him and I said, Skolya Rebbe, I understand that, you know, glasses are for seeing. You know, I never knew that there's another purpose for glasses. He goes, everything that a person gave you, that God gives you, that appears negative, has a positive attribute. If you're walking in a community, in an area where the vision is not something that I should be looking at or that I want to be seeing, thank God I wear glasses, I can take them off, I can't see 2 feet in front of my face without the glasses. So even though a person has gaiva, pride, but it can be used positively, the pride can be used to say, I can learn from that, I can do it, how do I elevate myself? So every attribute can be put both ways. So again, kol adam doesn't just mean every male. That's why the word Adam is used and not called Ish. It means from women too. I mean, it would be ridiculous to think that you can't learn something from a woman. You can probably learn more from women. We don't give ourselves the proper time to hear everything they have to offer and everything they have to say sometimes. But when it says Mikol Adam, it's not being exclusive, Chas v'Shalom. The term Adam is non-gendered. It's neither male nor female. It doesn't say Mikol Ish. It says Mikol Adam. And again, if we wanted to play here, we can go for hours and hours. Well, I don't want to do that because we can start delving into all the Kabbalistic numerics of Adam and go there, but we're not going to. I want to keep it a little bit more into the discussion mode. Okay, Ezel Gibar, what constitutes a strong person? I once heard from Shlomo Kalbach, there's two words in the Hebrew language that represent strength. One is Gibar, Gvura, which is strength, and the other one is Koach, which also means strength. What's the difference between koach and gvura? Also, when we have things like this in the Mishnah, he says Ezehu Gibor. He doesn't say Ezehu Bal Koach, who's a strong man. He's not talking about somebody lifting up 150 pounds, 200 pounds, 500 pounds. The difference that Shlomo said between Koach and Gvura, that's why in the Sfirot, when we say Sfirot tonight, we count, you know, there's Chesed, Gvura, Tferes, Netzach, those are the seven Sfirot. Why is it Gvura and not Koach? So what Shlomo taught, I think it was from the Ishbitzer, I remember him saying to me, he says, the difference between Koach and Gvura, Koach, the stronger I am, the more I can knock you down. Gvura, the stronger I am, the higher up I can lift you. What is it that you're trying to accomplish with the attribute of strength? Are you trying to be powerful and stronger than anybody else, the circus strongman? Or are you trying to be a person who can elevate everybody around you and elevate the people you come in contact with? Gvura is the power of elevating your fellow Jew, elevating yourself. Koach is the power of I'm stronger than you are, brute force, physical force. So when Ben Zoma says, Ezehu Gibor, once you know the definition of the word, immediately you know he's not talking about who can pick up 500 pounds, he's talking about something else.
Well, one is physical strength and one spiritual strength.
Spiritual strength, right? Or it could be physical strength, but it doesn't mean it from a, you know, broad strength perspective. It means from an achievement perspective, exactly.
Doesn't he mean by controlling passion?
What?
Doesn't he mean controlling passion?
Well, that's what he's about to say. That's the next three words. Is that Kovish as Yisrael, yeah?
Well, I'm going to say that in a sense, if one can control his prejudice, because prejudice can stand in the way of your gaining wisdom.
Right.
You know, if you have prejudice against, let's say somebody had prejudice against Hasidim.
Right.
They said, well, there's a great rabbi coming. I won't go because I don't like
him. Right. Before you even know. Right, exactly. Exactly. It's very true. It's very true. And that's why he says, Ezehu Gibor, what is strong? Hakovesh es Yitzro. Somebody who can, somebody who subdues the way he can, he translates it, his personal inclination. It's not just negative inclinations, any even on a positive level. If you remember, we just learned on Shabbos that everything, even things that you're allowed to do, everything is supposed to be done in moderation. The fact that you're allowed to eat meat and drink wine on Yontif doesn't mean that you should get stuffed and doesn't mean that you should get drunk. Controlling your inclination is not just from a negative, it's even within the realm of positive. That's control. Control is being able to moderate. That's a good word for it, moderation. Everything has to be done in moderation. That's hard for a person to accept sometimes that he wants to operate in moderation because I'm the best, I can do it. No. Control yourself. Relax. So anybody who can control his personal inclination, how do we know? Shenamar, Tover Chapayim Migibor. Better is he who is slow to anger than the strong man and one who controls his passions. Okay, this is a pasuk, and that's it's a pasuk in Proverbs, and he learns out that concept from there. Next, of course, is Ezehu Asher, who is rich. And of course, if Ben Zoma is doing it, and we're talking about it, we're not talking about who has more money in the bank. There's got to be more to it than that. So Ezehu Asher, what is a rich person? So he says, Hasamech b'chalka. Somebody is happy, somebody is satisfied with his lot. And I think that we can spend probably a year on these two words of Hasamech b'chalka, somebody being satisfied with what you have, because you have to define satisfied. You know, I always tell people, I always give the bracha that Art Raymond, remember Art Raymond? So Art Raymond used to end every music show, and he used to give the bracha that he would give to everybody was health, wealth, and the time to enjoy it. You remember that? So that's like, I always thought that was like a good way of parting from somebody's health, wealth, and the time to enjoy it. But here he's talking about wealth. What constitutes wealth? Are we talking about, I have a sefer at home. It's approximately that wide. And the name of the sefer is HaSameach B'Chalko. And who is happy with his portion? And I will tell you that I've started learning it about, I don't know, at least 10 times. I tell you that in the first 35, 40 pages that I've gotten through, I understand, Baruch Hashem, about a third of what I've read so far, and I've not been able to go further. So I'm going to start it again. And eventually, someday, you know, I'll get to it. Eventually, I'll understand what's going on. But being happy with what you have, being happy with what you have first means that you have to be able to humble yourself, that maybe I'm not entitled to everything. Or maybe I am entitled to everything, but what I have is everything I'm supposed to have. You know, it's very, very difficult when a person makes his own barometer of what I should have, what I should have. God, I understand. Did you miss my name in the book? Did you not notice that I was on the page that said I'm supposed to be receiving everything? And how many of us have seen, listen, Baruch Hashem, we've all had healthy, long lives. How many of us have seen the people that we have seen in the news and people we knew that had what they considered to be everything, and in reality, they had nothing? And the suicides and the murders and the, you know, all the things that take place, the lack of nachas. I tell my wife all the time, whenever we had tzaris, chas v'shalom, with kids, we never have tzaris. Baruch Hashem, I'm very happy today, Baruch Hashem. I'm extremely grateful to God for everything we have. But, you know, if a person ever goes through a hardship with a child, so I say, why me? Why did God do this to me? Of all people, I have to. So I would say to her, I said, listen, you don't know what kind of a deal you made. Or she would say, where's the financial? Why is it difficult, the money, you know? I'd say, you don't know what kind of a deal you made in Shemayim before you came down here. Imagine you're bound to come down to this world, and God looks and goes, okay, I'll give you a choice. Your kid should be Shomer Shabbos, or you should be wealthy. What are you going to do? And in a Shomer stage, you look at God, for sure, and you say, my kids be Shomer Shabbos. I'll manage without the money. I'll figure a way out. But I want my kids to be, you know, from it, to carry the tradition, keep going. You come down here, and the second you don't have a dime in your pocket, you start screaming at God. Okay, so you can beg God. You can say, fine, I know I cut you the deal, but can we maybe extend this a little bit? Can we maybe make it just a little easier? Fine, you can talk to him, you can ask, you can request. But you forget the deals that you cut. We cut these deals upstairs before we come down. So when it says here, Ezehu Asher, Asamech Bechelkai, a person just has to know to be happy with what he has. It doesn't mean happy. You have to run around and throw a party because you're broke and you owe money. That's not what it means. But it means to be accepting of and understand kol ma'adav rachmanu otav of it. Everything God does, he does for good. And I don't understand it. Okay, that's. I have to continue working on myself. You know, there's, yeah, please.
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely. He has a
Gateway to Happiness.
Gateway to Happiness. He has a very, very good book out called Gateway to Happiness, and he's basically building on this concept of Ezehu Asher Hasamech Bechelko. He is one of those hundreds of books that are written on this Hasamech Bechelko concept, and his books are excellent. So, yeah, if anybody doesn't have it and you want to get it, it's an extremely good book to read.
I have it, but...
So having it, you know, I have a lot of stuff in my closet. I have a lot of stuff on my shelves. I told people here once before that there was a person who got married and they went into the Sfarim store, and she was very well to do. So she went over to the person in the bookstore, you know, the Jewish books, and she walks over to them. She goes, "Okay, give me 2,000 brown, 2,000 green, 2,000 red, you know, to be able to put on the shelves." Baruch Hashem, I have a lot of Sfarim. I pray to God that I should someday have the opportunity to read through them and get through a major portion of them, you know, and that's it. But that's an excellent, excellent book for people to pick up and get. Making peace with yourself? Does making peace with yourself in your mind mean submissiveness to God? Or does making peace with yourself mean that you're in charge and you think you did a good enough job right now and you're happy with where you took yourself? So, depending on how you interpret making peace with oneself. If a person's an atheist and he makes peace with himself, I mean, should I have done that? Should I have done that? Yeah, you know what? I'll live with it. I'll move on. I made peace with myself. But I still totally took God out of the equation. That's definitely not what Ben Zalman is talking about. The kind of peace with yourself that he's talking about is submissiveness to Hashem. Acknowledging, God gave me, I have. Can I do something to change it? Possibly. Can I do? Fine. But submissiveness, being accepted of what you have. If I need more, I'll have more. And I'll ask for more. And if I get more, I'll be grateful for the fact that God gave me more. Ezehu Asher, so who is a rich person? Hasamech b'chalkom. Shenemar, because it says, Yigiach hapecha kisochel. And again, these are just psukim that he's quoting, so we'll just read them. We're not going to go into the pasuk in the location. That would be another whole. The labor of your hands, when you eat, you are praiseworthy, and it is well with you. Ashrecha, what does that mean? Ashrecha, ashrecha, you are praiseworthy in this world. V'tovlach, and all is well with you in the world to come. So you see that there's definitely a relationship here between man and God that he is discussing, because we're talking about this world and the afterworld. Any other questions or comments on Asher before we move on? Yeah?
It's always been a tremendous question in my head. There are so many people who achieve vast wealth that's not enough. They want more and more and more.
Right.
It's like a game. They've got to achieve power and they've got to do things. I'm not even talking about Jewish people.
Anybody. Happens to everybody.
Yeah, it's amazing that they have this concept that they've got to do more.
It's never enough. You know, the old joke is, he who dies with the most toys wins. You know, that's the mentality, and therefore they're never happy. Because no matter what they have and what they achieve, and they're also never in the moment. See, the biggest problem with that, they don't even realize, one of the reasons they're never happy is their need for more means I'm not living now, because I'm always worried about what I'm going to get. They can't possibly be happy. They've never lived one day in their lives. Because their mindset is always on tomorrow. What's going to be? How am I going to close that deal? Where is that coming from? How about enjoying the home right now? Sit there for an hour and, you know, enjoy the jacuzzi, enjoy the wife and kids. Do something. No, the mind is always, I have to be somewhere else. You can't live here in this world if you're always not living on this world. That doesn't work.
And yet, these people provide jobs and industry for the country.
Yeah. At some point, yes. You know, and just remember, they are God's servants. When we look at wealth, when a person has wealth, you know, one of the things we talk about as far as tzedakah is concerned and the like, is that, what does it mean a person who's samech b'chelko? Okay, this goes back to that. I saw Pshat says, a person knows when he earns a certain amount of money, you make $1 million. According to Torah, he's supposed to give at least 10% of that away to tzedakah. Hasamech b'chelko means a person who's happy with his portion. What does that mean? Out of the million, only 900,000 is mine. I'm happy with that. And I therefore give my 10% away with pride and with a smile on my face. And I'm happy to do it because that's not mine. That's what Hashem gave me to redistribute. I'm just his banker. That's what I'm doing here. So Hasamech b'chelko means somebody who's happy with his portion. But somebody who gives begrudgingly, or somebody who doesn't give, or somebody who doesn't share the wealth, so to speak, he's not Hasamech b'chelko anymore, because he's trying to keep someone else's portion. If you're keeping somebody else's portion, then you're a thief. God didn't give you 10 tenths. God gave you 9 tenths. He's just trusting you to distribute the extra tenth. Yes?
And if you give more, then you give
20%. So within the framework of halacha, like I said before, everything is supposed to be within moderation. A person is not supposed to give away 90% of his wealth. It's stupid. Yeah. You know, it's just not, it's not appropriate. It's not proper. Now, halacha basically dictates that a person should give between 10 and 20%. More than 20% is looked at as excessive. However, when you have a person who lives in a realm, it's 20% of what a person needs or receives and gets. When you have certain people who live in the world of money where it's just so massive, and you're talking in the world of billions, and if they gave away 30 or 40%, it would not affect their lifestyle or that of their great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren for the generations over, there's room to accept checks from them when they send them. Yes. I'm only not going to answer that for one reason. It's got nothing to do with what we're talking about at the moment. I'd be happy to discuss it with you, and yes, it's possible. Now's not the time to go into it, because it doesn't apply to Sameach B'chalko. I mean, maybe it does. Maybe that's what makes a person happy. But we're past Sameach B'chalko. We're up to... So we're not going to discuss it now, but you're welcome to talk to me about it, or maybe we'll just, you know, bring that into a more broader, greater discussion. Okay, and finally, Ezehu Mechubad, which person is honored? What constitutes honor? Hamachubed es habriyos. Normally a person would think who was honored if I got the biggest invitation that went out from the biggest yeshiva dinner in New York, and my name was at the top of the chart, and I had 3 of the 4 awards that they were giving, then I am the honored and the most honored person in the world. Here is definition of being honored. It has nothing to do with the honor that you receive. Hamachubed es habriyos. He who honors other people. Wow. If you give somebody else kavod, then you receive kavod. You know, when you see somebody else who cares so much about somebody else, the natural reaction is you look at that person and you go, look how much he cares. Look how beautiful he takes care of that person. Look how much involved he is. Okay? He receives honor by definition because of his action, not because he's standing there saying, excuse me, sir, you missed me today. I'm the most honored person on the block. You missed me. If guys say hello, that's not real covet. That's not honor. But if you stopped every single person, excuse me, can I help you? Do you need help crossing the street? Can I carry your groceries for you from one place to the other? You're giving somebody else honor? Do you need help? Open the door for you? Everybody else is going to stand there and say, wow, look at that guy. Look what he's doing. Look what he's accomplishing. Even though you're not doing it to receive the honor, and even if you did, there's room to say you should do it anyway, because that's the way to use what you were saying, Jack. That's a way to use the negative attribute of honor in a positive way. You want covered? Give somebody else honor so you should receive some. Is it wrong to want honor? Yeah, but if you're doing it by giving honor, okay, so you gained a little bit over there. It's a good way of utilizing it to trick, so to speak, the Yetzirah to give you something that you want to have and to do it in a positive way. So HaMechaber es HaBrios, somebody who honors other people. Shenemar ki mechabedai echabed uvoizai yekalu. Those who honor me, I shall honor, and those who scorn me shall be... where's the quotation from? The quotation is from Shmuel HaNavi. I don't know the exact context of the pasuk, but it's a Shmuel HaNavi.
When you do a mitzvah
somebody, you're honoring somebody. Yeah, for sure. Now, when I first saw this pasuk, and maybe that's one of the reasons you asked where the quote's from, because when I saw Ki Mechabdei Echabed, I thought for a second that it was the Rabbanu Shah, that's when Hashem was talking about taking honors to children. But it's got nothing to do with that, because they weren't giving honors. Nothing to do with, has nothing to do with that pasuk. It's a pasuk in Shmuel HaNavi, in the prophet Samuel. Okay, so we move on to Mishnah Beis. Ben Azay Omer. Ben Azay, yes.
Just to comment.
Please.
On this one. Who is honored, the one who gives honor. In a slightly different tone, I come out of a high school teaching milieu and you're dealing with kids who are disrespectful.
Right.
So teachers used to say effectively to a disrespectful kid, in order to get respect, the kids want respect,
right.
You know, so they'll be impudent
right.
to get it. So we used to say to the kid, in order to get respect,
you have to give respect.
Excellent. This is expressed as a general principle.
Right.
That's expressed as a norm that, for teaching kids.
By a general, by the principle. That's
well, you've got to earn it.
Right.
You've got to earn it.
And you know what? Today there's so many... There are so many schools of thought and education and how to do things, and everyone's going, you have to be positive. Everything has to be positive. You're supposed to discipline from positive, and you're not supposed to put out negative energy and say negative things. It always has to be positive. And yet, in a way, that's a reflection of what they're saying over here based on the same way you're translating it, which is the same thing. If you give, you get what you receive. That's the way the universe works. The universe works that you put out the midah k'neged midah. God punishes measure for measure, rewards measure for measure. You get back what you put out there. You put out their honor, you respect people, in return you will be respected. If you take people for a fool, if you're a politician that's going to get up there and lie and cheat and expect people to respect you, it doesn't happen. Except those people who are also cheaters and liars, or they don't realize what you're doing. You get back what you put out there. If you respect people, you get respect in return. Mishnah Bay, second Mishnah. Ben Azay Omer, Ben Azay says, Ben Azay's name was also Shimon, and I guess you can figure out by the fact that it does not say Rebbe, that Ben Azay also died young, Ben Azay also did not have smicha, but halavai, all the kids coming out of the yeshiva system in this day and age were at the level that these guys were at without the smicha. Michael the smicha, every single one of them, if they were able to do this. Heavy ratzu mitzvah kala, this is a tough one. A person should run to perform a minor mitzvah, uvareach min avera, should run away from a sin. What do you consider, what would you say, let's get some examples, what do you consider to be a minor mitzvah? Any thoughts? What's a minor mitzvah? Helping a blind man go across the street is a minor mitzvah, okay. Anybody else ever thought what you might consider to be a minor mitzvah?
How do you measure a mitzvah?
That's the point. The point is, how do you measure a mitzvah? And yet, you know, there's a Gemara that says, you know what a minor mitzvah is? The Gemara says, a minor mitzvah is sitting in the sukkah. Excuse me? You ever try and build a sukkah? You ever have to buy it? You have to own it? You have to get permission from the landlord to put it up? You got to tell the neighbors not to snitch that you did put one up? And then you have to get the sukkah and you have to sit in it, that it's raining and it's cold and it depends where you live? The Gemara considers a minor mitzvah to sitting in the sukkah. And the Gemara says, as a matter of fact, when it debates the conversation between the Jewish people, the difference between the Jewish people and the Goyish people, and the non-Jews, the Gemara says, in the end of days, Hashem will test everybody, and he will put them in the sukkah, and he will tell everybody to keep the mitzvah of sukkah, and then he's going to take out the chama min artika, he's going to take out the sun from its enclosure and from its resting place, and let the sun burn really strong. He says, and all the non-Jews are going to go running inside saying, I can't handle heat. And then he discussed how the Jewish people were going to be accustomed, and the Gemara says, that's a minor mitzvah. Okay, obviously the barometer that we're using to determine a mitzvah, what constitutes a minor mitzvah, what constitutes a serious mitzvah, is not necessarily what we think. And therefore, it is inappropriate for us to judge somebody for doing something right or wrong. He doesn't keep that, he doesn't eat kosher, he doesn't keep shah. There are a couple of biggies. There are a couple of biggies that if you do them in public, the Chumash and the Torah already tells you that if somebody is Mechal Shabbos Mefahesia intentionally, without the, you know, doesn't care, or somebody denies God openly and publicly, of course that's worse than if somebody doesn't eat glatt kosher. You know, obviously those things are, there are levels. But on a rule, as a rule, one is not supposed to sit there and say, he does it, he doesn't do it. It's not our place to, we don't know. We have no idea what's important upstairs, what's not important upstairs. You have to look at every single thing. I will tell you that whatever you relate to, that's a difficult one. Whatever a person has a hard time doing, and each individual has his own mitzvahs that are easy for him, for one person it could be getting up for minyan in the morning. It could be the hardest thing in the world for him to do. For him, that's a mitzvah chamura. It's a tough one.
But kala could be either minor or easy. You see, you're using the term harder and easier for kala and hard.
Right.
So a kala could mean an easy mitzvah,
right,
or it could mean a minor mitzvah.
Okay, so in the context, right?
Could be in the context of punishment versus star, and versus hard. What would you personally find hard? Because each person has different difficulties
and different issues, right? But when he says have a ratzel mitzvah kala, you should run to perform a minor mitzvah.
They interpret it as minor,
right?
But again, you're also interpreting it as easy.
As easy, right? We're using both, right? But they. Again, he interpreted as minor, doesn't necessarily mean minor.
I think it's easy based on the example that you gave, sitting in a sukkah.
Yes.
You don't have to do anything. You just sit.
Right.
You explain what it leads up to.
Right.
But I'm saying that
right.
There's no action involved.
There's no action involved. That's an emotionless right. It's emotional. It's a mitzvah. It's a, what do you call it? It's a sheval tasa.
Right.
It's a sit back. There are some mitzvahs you do, we have to do an action. And there are some mitzvahs that are passive mitzvahs, that you don't have to do an action. Right. So it says a person should run to do a mitzvah kala. Uvereach min avera. So what's the point? So what's he trying to say about run to do a minor mitzvah? So it doesn't mean easy, because what he's saying is, his point is that even if something is minor, meaning that it doesn't get that much, you would think it doesn't deserve that much credit and that much reward, so I'm not going to waste my time with that mitzvah. Let me go chase after a bigger mitzvah that I should do. No. He tells you, no. Even the most simplest of mitzvahs that require nothing, that you think gives you no payback, go after that. Right? Rutz commits to a mitzvah kali. You have to run towards a simple mitzvah, an easy mitzvah. It means both. Uvareach min avera. And you run away from an avera. Here he doesn't say easy avera, hard avera, good avera, bad avera. This is avera. A sin is a sin is a sin is a sin. You know, it doesn't make a difference if they're going to give you lashes or if they're going to put you up on the chopping block. A sin is a sin. You're supposed to avoid it regardless of what. Why? I'm sorry, what?
He gives you a reason, right?
Right, okay. Why? Shemitzvah gereris mitzvah. Because when it comes to doing a mitzvah, one mitzvah leads to another mitzvah. It's automatic. One feeds the other. It starts the process. However, the same rule is true about avera. Avera gereris avera. Look at the bottom number 2 on the bottom of this page. It says shemitzvah gereres mitzvah. For one mitzvah brings in its wake another mitzvah. When someone performs a mitzvah, he becomes conditioned to obey God's will. Conversely, each wrong act desensitizes his conscience. So it doesn't mean that if I do one mitzvah, all of a sudden I just have to sneeze. Where's another mitzvah? But when you get accustomed, it goes back to what we were talking about before, Teddy, about nullifying one's will to God. When you get accustomed to doing something because it's a mitzvah, not because I understand it. See, if I'm going to sit there and pick easy mitzvah, hard mitzvah, good mitzvah, bad mitzvah, what I'm really doing is I'm doing a mitzvah, but I'm doing it because I understand it. I'm doing it because I relate to it, because I want to be the big power guy who did the big mitzvah on the block. He's telling you not to do that. He's telling you, go after the easy mitzvah just as well. Why? Because when you give in and you do a mitzvah for God's sake, God told me the mitzvah, therefore I'm doing it. Conversely, you end up listening to God, and that leads you to want to do another fulfillment of God's will and to start following God's will more than your own. That's why even the simplest of mitzvahs is important to follow. And of course, a very negative activity breeds more negative activity. So what is the reward of doing a mitzvah? How can the reward of being a mitzvah do another mitzvah? I mean, what are you telling me? The reward of a mitzvah, schar mitzvah. The reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah. Why is that a reward? Okay, schar avera. The payback for doing an avera is another avera. I get it, because once you get started, you know, it says nasa like a heter. The Gemara says that if a person does an avera three times, if you do something three times, all of a sudden it becomes permissible to you. And it's not even an avera in your eyes anymore. It's like, oh yeah, I'm allowed to do that. I've been doing that for years. We've always done that. You know, it's like, that's what happens. So I can understand avera causes an avera. But what does it mean that the reward of doing a mitzvah is a mitzvah? So if you translate it the way we said it a minute ago, what means that the point of doing a mitzvah, even a light mitzvah, is the fact that you are conditioning yourself to do God's will. So if that's what you're doing and you're conditioning yourself to do that, then the reward of a mitzvah is that your conditioning worked. I'm working on myself. I'm trying to better myself to nullify my will to God's will. The fact that I want to do another mitzvah shows that I've accomplished my goal. I'm doing a good job conditioning myself. So the reward of doing a mitzvah is you're successful. You did a good job. How do I know it? Does another mitzvah wind up? Again, Shlomo once said to me, he said, how does a person know if what I'm doing, when a person does something, how do you know if your activity is good or bad? Sometimes you do something, you don't know, is it a mitzvah, not a mitzvah, should I have done it, shouldn't I have done it? He used to say, if it brings you closer to God, it was a good act. It was something that benefited you. The same thing as this is saying. It's conditioned you to get closer to God. And when you feel good in that mode, then you want to do something else that will condition you further to get closer to God. So schar mitzvah, schar avera is an avera. Okay, I think for the first time out, you know, pretty good. I think we'll leave it at that, two Mishnahs. And should we do this again next week?
Sure.
Okay, let's keep going. Let's do it again.
Minor mitzvah is one that you do, a major mitzvah is
that's like Mel Brooks said, the difference in comedy and tragedy. You know that? Very good.
Mention
Chikoa.
Measure Averas all that way.
Baruch Tia, Baruch Tia.